Welcome back to the Exterminatus podcast. Apparently, according to Ray, this is an important episode because it's indeed episode 10. Ray, any thoughts on being on our episode 10?
Surprised we've made it this far without too many major problems.
Well, we try to save all those for behind the scenes and blooper reels. But hey, we're back this week here to talk about the Iron Halo GT, which was played this past weekend. We've got quite a bit to go over from discussion point, the Astra Militarum. Still can't get used to that name, but otherwise known as the Imperial Guard Codex, is due to come out this coming week. So we got lots to discuss there, plus your usual ITC top 10 and next week's events. So, Ray, you ready to get started?
Let's go.
All right, let's take a look at the Iron Halo GT. Definitely one of the largest events that occurs in the Midwest area, I believe it was in Oklahoma.
Yes.
No idea what town, because, well, I don't know the towns in Oklahoma all that well.
Bartlesville, if I remember right.
Bartlesville. That sounds like a great college football town. So actually, this would count as a major. They had 97 participants, so they were, like I said, one of the largest in the area. An interesting mix of teams. Let's get started with your top eight. Starting in number eight from Forge World Columbia, Sam Henley with his Chaos Soup mix. We've talked about Sam's list in the past. And I kind of feel bad for Sam because he was actually 5-0 going into the final round and lost to the eventual winner on the top table. But that one loss, he had, if you kind of look, he kind of ran out of steam towards the tournament ended. He started off 19 points on his first win, then 14 points, back up to 18 points, then 15 points, then 11 points, then finally his first loss. So despite going 5-0 and then taking only one loss on the final table, he dropped all the way to 8th place. So a tough break for Sam that particular time. In 7th place, we had Ken Eubanks and playing Adeptus Soriatus. Ken has a unique position in this particular tournament. He also went undefeated, but he didn't go 6-0. He went 4-0-2, landing himself in 7th place, but he ended up collecting a truckload of ITC points because they were going undefeated, all those extra bonus points for going through. So curious to see that. In 6th place, Cody Middleton with Chaos Demons from the New World Marauder, same team as Ken. He went 5-1 with his first loss coming in round 2. In 5th place was Thomas Reedy, by far one of the coolest team names in a long time. For those who don't recognize the name Thomas Reedy, you might know him from Bella Lost Souls fame as Goat Boy. He does a weekly column on there. Surprise, surprise, he played his old love, which was Chaos Space Marines, and his team name, by far one of the coolest I've seen in a long time, Adeptus Shenaniganus. Yeah, so he also went 5-1. 4th place, Baxter Seguin, playing Chaos Demons from Team Warthogs, also going 5-1. Ryan Olson came in 3rd, with playing Ultramarines, also from the same team, Warthogs. Interesting, in 2nd place was Tyler DeVries, sorry, mispronounced your name there, from the Beast Coast. He was playing Grey Knights. He took an early loss in round 2 to none other than Pablo Martinez from Chapter Tactics podcast, but then ran the table further and finished the game at 5-1, landing him into 2nd place. But your eventual winner, we haven't heard from him in a while, but he is your defending ITC champion, and he is back. Matt Root from Frozen North Gaming went 6-0, almost a perfect score. 5 straight 19-point victories with a 15-point win on the final table. But the thought was interesting. Last year he won with War Convocation. Matt's playing Alpha Legion these days, so curious to see what changes he's made and what his flavor of list looks like. But that is your Iron Halo wrap-up there. Raymond, any thoughts on the meta of your top eight?
Lots of chaos. You know, I wish I would have had the time to jump on and see if I could have caught any of the lists during this tournament. I just ended up too busy over the weekend. Did you catch any?
I didn't. Had some trouble trying to look at those and getting access during the weekend, so I was doing most of my research today. Just a couple things if you go just outside the top eight. Kyle, and I'm going to butcher your last name, sir. I do apologize. Doshout, I believe his name is. Doshout, maybe it's French. Tau, coming in 9th place. We haven't seen Tau near the top 10 in quite some time. 10th place, another Astra Militarum player. That would be Kenneth Carnes. And then continues, another Chaos Demon, an Orcs player, another Chaos player, Trent Northington, who finished in the top 8 not too long ago with Ultramarines in 15th place. Tiernan's in 15th place, and Inari in 15th place as well. The tie there. And then a drop to 18th place, you got a Militarum Tempestus, which I'm curious, will that be a faction once with the new Codex drops? So interesting, as it kind of, as you work your way down the list, you start seeing some of the other lists. But that top 8, yeah, is dominated by the Forces of Ruin. So interesting to see. I think people are getting their, finding their footing with the new Codex. And
something interesting.
What's that?
In 42nd place, there's a Quinn, I'm assuming it's Shippus. His faction is listed as Dark Mechanicus.
So I've heard other players playing this. So what they take is a, at a Forge World, there is a Chaos Wainwright, I think it's called, or Hellwright, or something to that effect. It's basically a Chaos version of a, whatever the Adeptus Mechanicus leader is called. I can't remember. And then he takes a whole bunch of Knigets. And that's pretty much the list. That's what that other player played. I'm not sure if this gentleman played the same list, but that's how they've been able to get a Dark Mechanicus faction. My hat goes off to him. I might actually have to try that.
Interesting.
Got the models. I should do that. Interesting, as we go down the list, there's a couple Harlequin players, mid-table obscurity, but still respectable. 3 wins, 1 tie, 2 losses. So, you know, when you've got 94 players, 3 wins is still pretty respectable.
That it is.
It's kind of flipping through. But, the, yeah, as you keep going through, I notice, yeah, there's Quinn. Still a ton of chaos in the particular list. So, a lot going on there. All right, so let's review our winning list from the Iron Halo GT. As we mentioned, Matt took a departure from War Convocation to Alpha Legion. Ray, what's he got in his list?
Well, he starts out with a battalion detachment of Alpha Legion made up of a Chaos Lord, a Sorcerer. He's got 3 squads of Chaos Cultists, 2 of those just being 10. The third is a squad of 40.
Okay. So far, it sounds a lot like James' list from last week. Okay.
He's given all of them Mark of Slaanesh.
Interesting. Okay.
He's got 2 units of Khorne Berserkers. It's looking like 8-man squads. It's either 8-man squads or 16-man squads. Not necessarily the best layout on the list. Then he's got 2 Chaos Rhinos with double combi bolters.
So it's probably for the Berserkers. Get them across the table.
Yeah. In which case, they would be squads of 8. Let's see. Okay, following that, there is a battalion detachment of Chaos Soup, made up of 2 Malefic Lords.
Of course.
3 squads of 10 Brimstone Horrors. And 3 of the Fetid Bloat Drones.
Ooh, sneaking those in.
Mm-hmm. Following that, we've got a Supreme Command Attachment of Magnus. And 3 Malefic Lords.
So it sounds pretty similar to James's list, actually. So he's got the same pieces. Probably the only thing I see here differently is he went for the rhinos to protect Khorne Berserkers, and then rather than the going for all the like heavy support teams that James had. So it didn't sound like he took any of those at those particular points. But like you said, kind of the typical list.
Yeah. All right. Tyler's list is made up of... He's got a patrol detachment made up of a Grandmaster, a 10-man strike squad, and 2 5-man purgation squads.
Hmm. Interesting.
He's got a brigade detachment of Celestine, 2 Elysian Commanders, 3 Astropaths, a Calexis Assassin, 2 Elysian Command Squads, 2 Elysian Guard Squads of 10 mans, 10-man Strike Squad of Grey Knights, and 3 5-man Scout Squads, a 3-man Heavy Weapons Team of Mortars. There's 3 squads of that.
Okay.
3 Cyber Wolves.
What?
Uh-huh.
How did that sneak in?
And then a Spearhead Attachment of 1 Elysian Commander, 1 Elysian Command Squad, 2 more Heavy Weapon Teams with Mortars, and 4 Cyclopses.
Ooh. I don't remember the stats on those off the top of my head, but I do remember them being just, you know, another one of these sit in the back of the of your army and just open fire. Delete units.
Yay, artillery.
Yeah. It's basically like a variant of the Medusa and all those other ones.
Ah. And then you mentioned Quinns?
Yep. I'm curious to see. You asked what a Dark Mechanicus army would look like. Let's see if I was right.
There it is. Yeah, I definitely have an issue with him being quote-unquote Dark Mechanicus. It's Chaos Soup. You ready for this?
Sure.
First attachment. Supreme Command Attachment. Made up of, take a wild guess, 4 Malefic Lords. Along with a Renegade Knight. Doesn't really specify what's on that knight. Next up, another Supreme Command Attachment. Made up of 5 Malefic Lords. And then a Renegade Knight. Styrix. And the third attachment, 5 more Malefic Lords, and a Renegade Knight Acheron.
Okay, so he's got the Knights, and he's got a lot of Malefic Lords. Eh, okay. Interesting. Not really. Sorry. Quinn, I'm sure you're doing well with your list. That's not something that I would want to play, but okay.
Alright. Not Mechanicus in any way.
Does not pass the ray test. So interesting. So that is your Iron Hail GT again. Congratulations for running a super event. Congratulations to our winners. We got a busy discussion segment this time, so let's get to it.
All right.
All right, so welcome back. This week we want to get into our in-depth review of the Adeptus Militarum. But first, there was an FAQ dropped by Games Workshop over the weekend. Overall, not all that eventful. They added a couple stat changes to one of the knight weapons. I think it was the Volcano Cannon or the Magma Cannon or something around that effect.
I think it was called the Thermal Cannon.
It's Thermal Cannon, yes, thank you. They added a couple stat changes. Apparently in the Death Guard Codex, a lot of people were wondering if it was true. Can a Demon Prince actually have wings? It is true, and the point values were adjusted. But the biggest one was sort of a question that came up, and I don't know, it's one of those assumptions I made. But so basically, let's say if you're playing Imperial Soup, and you've got one detachment of Ultramarines and one detachment of, Black Templar, we'll say. Okay? So the detachment of Ultramarines means you can unlock the stratagems for Ultramarines, and the detachment that gives you Black Templar unlocks the Black Templar stratagems. I would assume you could only play the Black Templar stratagems on the Black Templar detachment. Apparently, that is not the case. As was asked, the gentleman had a Death Guard detachment and an Alpha Legion detachment, and he was wondering if he could use the Alpha Legion stratagem that allows you to outflank the cultist squad and then recycle them on a Death Guard cultist squad. And Games Workshop was like, yeah, sure, go ahead. I was like, what?
Okay,
what is that?
So I know what that was.
So
with the stratagem, it's not really... The instance in the example wasn't really so much Chaos Soup. It's just a list made up of two different detachments. So soup is really a list when you have a detachment that's made up of multiple different what would be codexes. But in a case where it's a two different detachments, it's not really soup. It's what allows them to be able to use the strategies.
Or peanut butter and jelly is what you're saying? They're separated foods?
Yeah.
Okay.
And because of the example, without opening up the book to look at it, the stratagem listed simply basically says a friendly chaos unit. It doesn't specify that it has to be from that legion. So there's nothing in there that really says that you can't do it. Now, if they were to try to use something that said, you know, a Death Guard unit, they would not be able to use that in the Alpha Legion. But since that particular Alpha Legion, I don't think it's Alpha Legion, it's just a standard Chaos Space Marine stratagem. And since it doesn't specify a legion, but it does say friendly, you'd be able to do that.
Okay. I guess I could see it that way. I was just surprised when it came out. I just looked at that one. What? What is that? And maybe my understanding was not there, but hey, it's available and ready to go. So, fair enough. So, like I said, most of the rest of the remainder of the FAQ is pretty uneventful, but you can log on to the GW community page and look for yourselves and see any big changes. But some of the big changes that come on is each day for the past week since our last recording, Games Workshop's community page has been dropping us hints on what we can expect from the Imperial Guard Codex, or the Astra Militarum. I believe last time when we were recording, we had just gotten the Catagen material, since we were able to comment on that. But interesting, as we go through the rest of these, there's, first of all, one thing I do like is there's actually a ton of flavor with some seriously balanced rules mixed in there. I used to hate this codex. This was my least favorite faction in all of 40K, because to me it was, why would you go to the ice cream store with 43 separate flavors and ask for vanilla? You know, I have an opportunity to, I can play space elves or corrupted machines or the crazy monsters from Alien. Who do you want to be? I want to be the World War II Russians. Ugh, why? But I think these, what they call regimental doctrines, are basically their version of chapter tactics, really help add a lot of flair. So if you have those old Forge World models from Valhallen, the Terran, they're all in here. They're all, so it's very exciting to hear that, especially when I think of future codices coming out. Really excited about that. So the other thing that struck me about this codex right off the bat as I'm looking at all the materials coming out, unlike everything else where you got stratagems and some sort of chapter tactic, they also expanded on orders, which are unique to this particular faction. They used to have only like your stock three or four orders. There are a ton of new orders, and some of them are regiment specific. So we'll go into those in greater detail. But the first and most important thing everyone's asking about this is, what happened to conscripts? Because they did promise that conscripts would change. So here's what they changed, and Brian, you tell me, nerf or not nerfed? So conscripts, first of all, the max squad size has been reduced to 30. And number two, when the order is given to a squad of conscripts, they will obey it only on a 4+, where everyone else in the army, it's automatic. Those are the only changes they made. Nerfed or not nerfed?
Ultimately, not nerfed. They've done a little bit. The thing is, I don't think they've done enough. So the squad size I'm okay with. I feel, though, that considering what the conscripts are, that if they're going to make it be a roll, it shouldn't be any better than a 5+. You know?
That's interesting. I didn't think about doing that. I agree with you. It's not a nerf to me as well, because by reducing the squad size down to 30, darn. So if I had 120 conscripts in my list, I went from 3 units of 40 to, I just blanked on the math, but basically I'm taking more squads. If there's ever an army that has plenty of room in their force org tree to take more squads, especially in the troops section, it'd be Astra Militarum. Especially when you're looking at taking brigades over battalions, you got troop slots galore. So now you're just using up more slots. So the fact that you have two blobs, you went from two blobs of 40 to three blobs of 30 really doesn't change anything. I think rather than nerfing the conscripts, though, I think what they just did is try to make the rest of the codex better by adding all these additional upgrades, which we'll talk about in a second. So you at least have other options to consider. So it's an interesting approach. You know, we're not going to make something bad. We're just going to make everything else better. But I'll say it. I've said it every episode. I'm feeling the codex creep. Oh, my goodness. this is a very powerful codex, and it just got a little more powerful. So ready for a deep dive?
Yep, already.
All right, snorkels on. Let's get going. So, as I mentioned, the big things that really makes this particular codex stand out from any of the previous releases is the unique mechanic of orders. Now, any of the major characters can typically give out orders. There are a couple exceptions to that particular rule. The range is 6 inches, and unlike previous editions, you may issue one order, and it goes off automatically, with the exception of the conscripts. So, once you pass it out, you're doing great. So company and platoon commanders have this, and then there's a warlord trait that also allows you to maximize the ability to give orders. Some of these are your old favorites, but there's a couple new ones out there. Take aim allows you to reroll once to hit, so kind of choose your own aura ability if you think of it that way. First rank fire, second rank fire is pretty awesome. Las guns and hotshot las guns go to rapid fire 2, so that means anything under 12 inches you're getting 4 shots. When you're looking at these larger squads, it gets pretty gross pretty quick. Bring it down, an old favorite, reroll wound rolls of 1. A forwards for the Emperor is ordered on any unit may shoot, even if advanced. So I think that's interesting. That doesn't say anything about a minus 1 for on advanced weapons or on assault weapons only. So could be kind of neat. Get back in the fight, the old favorite. Ordered unit may shoot, even if it fell back. So at first, it looked confusing. I had to go back to the rules. You issue orders during the shooting phase. So basically, you fell back in the movement phase, then you issue the order in the shooting phase so they can shoot after they fell back. So I was like, oh, okay, that makes a little more sense. Move, move, move. Instead of shooting, the unit may move in advance but cannot charge. So again, we're doing this in the shooting phase. You already had a full movement or a full advance, and then you're moving again. That could be nice for getting a particular unit in position. And the last one is fixed bayonets. The ordered unit may fight as if it were in the fight phase. So again, you're doing this during the shooting phase. Not sure how powerful this is, because when I think of close combat, I usually don't think of Astra Militarum, but I could be proven wrong.
Could be interesting with the Catechins getting the plus 1 strength.
That's a good point. I try to remember off the top of my head how many attacks they have. They may not be that. It's the point is you're getting an extra attack, and being that you're doing it in the shooting phase, that means your opponent doesn't get to swing back. So, pretty good. It might be one of those things where I could see, definitely seeing use for it if you know you're going to win it. So it's an opportunity, like you're already down or you're tied, and you think, okay, if I get an extra swings, I can whittle him down so in my assault phase I can take out the unit. Could be a neat little effect there.
Yeah.
So in addition to those standard infantry orders, they also added tank orders, and which I thought, I don't remember seeing these, and these can be given for any Lehman Russ tank, so any tank commander or Commander Pask, the character, can use these. The first one is full throttle. The model may move in advance instead of shooting. Again, another great way to get forward or perhaps take an objective, maybe looking at line breaker, end of game. Could be quite useful. Again, you get that 6-inch range, though, so you got to really work at that. Gunner's skill on sight may reroll to hit rolls of 1. And this one is, I think, the strongest of the three, is a strike and shroud. The unit may shoot, then pop smoke.
Yeah, I think that's definitely going to be a powerful one.
So now we're going to combine this with a new rule they gave all the Lehman Russ tanks. So straight up, if the Lehman Russ tank moves half its movement value, It may fire the turret weapon twice. So you kind of park forward or don't move at all. Let it rip, shoot it away, and then pop smoke with this order. That can get pretty nasty pretty quick.
It is important to note, of course, if someone chooses to do that, both shots must be fired at the same target.
That is a good point. But still pretty, pretty nasty at this point.
Definitely.
So Militarum Dispestis became its own regiment and got lumped in with there, so you won't be seeing a separate codex for them. But they're still quite as strong as they've always been and continue to have the same flair and feel as they always had before them. So let's get into some of the generic stratagems first before we get into individual doctrines. Some really interesting ones. I'm not going to go through all of them because there are, my God, at least 12 of these. So I'll kind of go over some of the interesting ones. There is one that allows you to, your vehicles can hit on twos in close combat. So we remember most of these tanks are strength 7 and 8, so now they're doing some serious damage. There's one where you can repair your vehicles. One that really struck me, and I could definitely see this happening in the Orc Codex should it come out in the near future, is called the Consolidate Squads. You spend a command point, and two infantry squads can merge together into a single squad. And they weren't just the infantry keywords, specifically the infantry squads in the Codex entry, so the particular squad. So I thought that was interesting. Mass together, prevent a kill point. Yeah, kind of interesting. So you can spend another command point for Inspired Tactics. It allows your officer to issue another order after it's already issued one. So we talked to us already about orders. There's your chance to start spending command points. And it doesn't say, stratagem rules, so you can play once per phase. There's a way to get Overwatch on a 5-up. That can be done on a vehicle as well. There is a take cover, allows you to add +1 to your saving throws. There is a way to kind of basically give one of your units the commissar effect if you don't have a commissar. All for one command point. This one's going to be pretty popular. It's called Vengeance for Cadia. One command point grants units a reroll to hit and to wound if they are targeting a Chaos keyword unit. So at first, that's very situational. We just got done talking about a tournament. 6 of the top 8 were Chaos players. Think it might happen sooner or later.
Yeah.
So relics are pretty interesting. One in particular I want to make everyone kind of aware. It brings back... So bad news, I'd say, is character-wise, I did not see... El Rahim. But he still lives, and there's this new war gear called the Dagger of Tuksak. Tuksak? I can't probably pronounce that. During deployment, you can set up one infantry unit along with the bearer in reserves, and they appear within 6 inches of a table edge of your choice, and within 3 inches of any other unit, and more than 9 inches away from enemy models. So guess who's back? There's a couple other ones. I believe there was one. Yep, on a 5-up, you get your command point back. So there's a couple neat little tricks and traits in there, I believe. So a couple key things to mix and match. But you're definitely want to maximize your command points for the stratagems and then buff them further with your orders. So let's get into the individual regiments. So starting right off the bat with Cadia. So this is your classic, what we've come to known as your basic Astra Militarum. So they get to reroll ones in the shooting phase, no matter what, so if they did not move. So it kind of can save some of your orders there. And if the infantry received the take aim order, they may reroll all misses if they did not move instead of just ones. So that's kind of nice. So a little bit of a gun line effect. They have a unique order called Pound Them Into the Dust. This is a tank order. This is the reroll the number of shots fired from a Lehman Russ turret. So that includes the battle cannon. So let's combine that with not moving or keeping your movement under half and firing that twice. It could get pretty nasty pretty quick. They have a couple of unique relics. Once per game, you may re-roll all to hit and all to wound rolls of 1 for a Cadian unit within 12 inches of the bearer. Sounds really good until you see once per game. So that's kind of your stock Cadia unit. Interesting group. Catechin, we talked about last week, but just a quick reminder. +1 strength and +1 leadership. And you get, if you have a random number of shots, like a heavy flamer that is D6 shots, you get to re-roll that. So, Ray, what's your favorite so far?
You know, I think I kind of like the pound them to dust order. I gotta be honest, so I'm really partial to tanks when it comes to the guard.
Okay. Well, you might like this new faction then. So the next one is Valhalla. This one really struck to me. This is a more of a mechanized force. So right off the bat, for infantry, if they fall back, you have the number of models that flee. And for vehicles, you double the number of wounds when determining what wound track they're on. So let's say if you got a tank with 14 wounds, you knock it down to 10. Well, 10 times 2 is 20, so it's still at its full potential. Even when you get down to like 4 wounds, it would count as having 8 wounds, so I think that puts it like in the middle track. So they're going to be operating at higher efficiency despite taking more wounds. They also have a nifty ability that they can fire at enemy units, even if friendly units are within 1 inch of the opponent. Of course, every one you roll, you hit your own unit. But, you know, acceptable losses. There's collateral damage.
Yeah.
Send in the next wave. If an infantry unit is wiped out, you can bring it back in your deployment zone and more than 9 inches away from an enemy unit and 6 inches from the table edge for a mere 2 command points.
Not bad.
Not bad. And I keep reading that. Select Valhalla infantry units, excluding characters. Okay, so no characters. But any infantry unit, not just cultists, they get to recycle everything. So I just kind of went, whoa. So that could be very interesting. Vestroian, be honest, I didn't think these were Games Workshop models. I thought they were Forgeworld all this time. They get, they're even more gun-liney. They add 6 inches to the maximum range of any heavy or rapid-fire weapons. And if they're normally 24 inches, then they have another nifty ability called Repel the Enemy. So the ordered unit can fire on enemy units even if they're within 1 inches of the firing unit. So you get those. So basically you get a shooting phase with all your weapons, not just your pistols, in the shooting phase. So load up on some plasma there. This one's really good. I like this one a lot. Armageddon. Yeah, this one's pretty neat. So their doctrine is industrial efficiency. Infantry may double the number of shots from their rapid-fire weapons at 18 inches instead of 12, and vehicles ignore AP minus 1, so they treat it as AP 0. Pretty good. Okay, great. They have a specific order called Mount Up. Ordered units may shoot and then embark Armageddon transport within 3 inches so long as the unit did not disembark this turn.
That's actually pretty good, because that's normally something you have to do during the movement phase.
Correct. So, granted, if you can't do it at the turn you came out, but when you think about that, you can, you know, you get out at the start of your movement phase, move the tank in between to give you some, basically manufacture your own cover, kind of old 5th edition rules. And then the following turn, move the tank out of the way, shoot, then use the command point to get into the tank, and go, nanny, nanny, you can't shoot me now. pretty, pretty cool. By the way, there's also a additional stratagem called Armored Fist. For 1 command point, you can give an infantry unit rerolls of 1 to hit if they disembark from a transport. So again, heavy weapons, plasma, just screams that I come out. I'm rerolling my 1s. And then popping back in the transport on the next turn. That's pretty cool.
And just in and out by that transport vehicle.
All right, our next faction, our next regiment, Talaran. These are the desert guys, so the Lawrence of Arabia of 40K. Interesting, they definitely... I'm not sure how strong this is. This is one of those that doesn't, like, leap off the page. But I have a feeling as soon as I say that, I'll play them in the store and get just annihilated. Swift like the wind. Infantry units can advance and shoot any weapons normally, apart from heavy weapons, and vehicles can move and shoot heavy weapons with no penalty to hit. Finally, titanic weapons can advance and shoot heavy weapons as if they were assault weapons. So lots of movement going on, lots of moving and shooting. They have a unique order. A Lieben Russ may move 6 inches before or after it shoots, and this does not impact the grinding advance special rule.
Wow.
Yeah. They have an additional stratagem called Ambush. It's 3 command points, one of the most expensive ones we've seen. Place 3 Talaran units in reserves. These enter the battlefield within 7 inches of any board edge, more than 9 inches away from enemy units. So basically, yeah, you don't have El Rahim, but he lives on in spirit with this stratagem.
All right, then.
Yeah, not too bad. And then finally, Militarum Tempestus, as we mentioned, no longer a separate codex. They have their own regimental doctrine. First one, stormtroopers. At half range, a model with this doctrine can make another shooting attack on a roll of a 6+ to hit with shooting weapons. So at first, it doesn't sound that powerful, but anyone, any of you Eldar players who've dabbled with Shadow Spectres know they have that same ability. Those sixes add up pretty quickly when you have high rate of fire weapons, especially with first rank fire, second rank fire order. That could get pretty deadly really fast. Militarum Tempestus have a unique order as well. It's called Elimination Protocol Sanctioned. I just want to say that during a game. I think that'd be a lot of fun. You can reroll fail to wound rolls for models in the ordered unit when firing at vehicles or monsters. So, kind of defines the role as being big game hunters, but it's still pretty neat. They also have an additional stratagem that for 1 CP, enemy units set up on the battlefield, a Militarum Tempestus, I'm having trouble saying that word, is -1 to hit if targeted from more than 12 inches away. Kind of handy.
I think you read that wrong.
Probably did.
So what it says is, if an enemy unit gets deep struck in, and they're within 12 inches of an infantry unit that is not Militarum Tempestus, then they can fire at them, shoot at them with a -1 to hit.
There we go. I didn't read that long, so it's kind of like the old. I forgot his name. Not Drago, the other guy. He was expecting you. From Grey Knight fame. Forgot what his name was. Ah!
No, I don't remember that one.
Anyway, everybody knows who I'm talking about. They're all screaming as we speak as they're listening to this. So yeah, so if somebody drops in within 12 inches, you can shoot back at them at -1. Pretty handy. Wait, there's more. There's a relic that allows the model to issue another order on a 2+. And plus they have a warlord trait that allows them to deny the witch, which can come in handy.
Yeah, so I've got to be honest, if I were to do a guard army, Militarum Tempestus is the way I'd go.
Oh, don't answer yet. There's more.
Oh, no.
Next one's the Mordians. So this cracks me up because this sounds like such a war machine ability, but they're... regimental doctrine is called Parade Drill. They get +1 leadership and +1 to hit with Overwatch if all models in the unit are in base-to-base contact with at least another model in the unit. Vehicles get a +1 to hit with Overwatch if within 3 inches of another vehicle. So good news is there's no templates, so you can clump your models together and get a +1 to leadership and to Overwatch.
And no one set the pie plates.
No pie plates. They also have a unique order called Form Firing Squad. The ordered unit can target a character with rapid fire weapons, even if the character is not the closest unit.
Wow.
Yeah, I see your buff whatever, and it's going to die, and I'm not a sniper. But wait, there's more. How about more? Volley fire for one command point. The ordered unit gets another shot with the same weapon on a 6+.
Oh.
So we drop that on top of the form of firing squad. they can also get a 4+ save after they failed armor saves. That's a relic.
The warlord trait's not bad, though.
Each time a model flees within 6 inches of your warlord on a 4+, they do not flee. So that's per model. That is pretty good.
I mean, that might as well be a 4+ and feel no pain. Or the new style. I mean, granted, it only works when you run away, but it's the same effect now.
It's a similar effect. I think the difference between, because earlier there was, you said there was a one regimental group that just simply, okay, you cut the number of losses in half, and this one gives you a 4+. So you kind of go, well, what's the difference? One is you'll always roll average. You're guaranteed because it says you'll take half. This one, if you get hot or a couple of rerolls, you could potentially, you know, save 75%. You know, probably when you need it most, you'll fail all of them. But hey, it's the fickleness of a 4+ roll. So it's still pretty neat. So you're still sticking with Militarum Tempestus?
I think so.
I don't know. I'm kind of leaning more towards Armageddon, but I'm kind of I think that's, if I was going to play guard, I would play more tanks anyway. So.
So the nice thing is the Militarum Tempestus is not as restricted a list as it was back in 7th edition. Back then, it was seriously just Militarum Tempestus box, which could be made into either the basic troops or the command squad, the Torox Prime, and then the Valkyrie. They've actually included other units to be considered part of it so that they can be a force. In fact, the list includes not just Militarum Tempestus units, but also the Tech Priest engines here, Servitors, the Ministorum Priest, Crusaders, any of the Aeronautica Imperialis units, the Scholastus Icanus, so their Psykers, and then some Officio Perfectus units, and even some of the Militarum Auxiliary.
That is quite a bit. So it kind of fleshes them out a little bit, gives a little more meat on the bone.
Definitely. And likely it gives them, of course, more tanks to work with, too, I would assume. It doesn't specifically say that, but...
just mentioned I was going to go quick glance at their psychic abilities, because they do have their own psychic tree.
Yes, it's the Psychana Discipline. So, the first one on that list is Terrifying Visions. It's a little underwhelming for Warp Cost 7. It's -2 leadership to an enemy unit.
There's not a lot of that, though. There's a lot of -1s out there, and Night Lords are the only ones that allow you to stack -1, so I agree 7 is a little high, but -2 is one of the more potent abilities when it comes to leadership reduction.
Mm-hmm. The next one is Gaze of the Emperor. It's Warp Charge 6, in which case you draw a line that is 2d6s in length, and each model under the line triggers a mortal wound on their unit at a 4+.
I always hate this mechanic, the draw the line mechanic. Never liked it.
The biggest problem is width.
Well, they've gotten some of the FAQs. They said it's 1 millimeter thick, but it's just the whole. It's almost like a template weapon again. You draw the line. It's over it. No, it's not. It's clipping the edge. It's close enough. Ugh, I hated it. I hate that mechanic. I think they should have just made it like a flamey, here's the range, and it does 2d6 hits that cause a mortal wound on a 4+. But anyway.
So the third one is Psychic Barrier for Warp Charge 6. A friendly Astromilitarum unit within 12 inches gains +1 to their saving throws. That's not bad.
That's not bad. So that's both cover saves and invuls, correct?
Yeah.
Yikes. That's not good.
The next one is Night Shroud. Another Warp Cross 6. A friendly unit of the guard within 12 inches is -1 to hit for ranged weapons.
That's handy. I like that.
The fifth one on the list is Mental Fortitude. Warp Charge 4, 12-inch range, makes a friendly guard unit automatically pass morale tests.
At first I was like, eh, but then I was like, I don't know how I missed it. Warp charge 4?
Yeah.
That's like falling out of bed easy. So, God, why wouldn't you cast that at least once a turn?
Especially with how many psychers you can have on in a unit that's all guard. And the last one, the last another discipline is Psychic Maelstrom, Warp Charge 7. Select an enemy unit within 18 inches, and they take continuous mortal wounds on a 2+, 3+, etc. until the roll is failed or you destroy the unit.
Oh, my friend Mike is listening to this. He's gonna be like, he's the king of failing rolls. I mean, he would just wipe out units on left and right.
So I'm curious about this one, and I'll tell you why. The way it's described, it sounds like you first is a 2+, then a 3+, then a 4+, then a 5+, then a 6+.
Okay.
So that's only ever going to kill 5.
True.
But if that first one you roll is a 1, you're done. So it has potential to be
It
both
has.
very good and to be a dud.
So I'm wondering, like a multi-wound model, let's say you get like Magnus or Mortarian in your ranks. That could be interesting.
You know, in that case, yes. But it also kind of depends on how many wounds they have, because if they're at full, you're taking out wounds, but they're not going to get any weaker. Always got to remember that that first tier is always roughly half their health. So it'll be a lot stronger after you break them down below the half mark than it will be when they're at full.
True, but I'm also thinking that opening salvo, I'm firing everything I can to make sure Magnus doesn't get into my lines.
Well,
So it's a, yeah, kind of get through it.
for 18 inches. That's the thing, though. It's
18's,
definitely.
that's a good range for a mortal wound weapon. I mean, Smite's only 12, I believe.
No, Smite is also 18.
Oh, my mistake.
In fact, of course, if depending on if you're going up against demons, some of them have ways to make that even longer. Especially the Lords of Change, which can go 30 inches, if I remember right.
Thanks.
Yeah. So I'd definitely say if you're gonna do it, do it. But don't make that be your first move against them.
Right. All right. So power creep continues. You see as the new codices come out. So this should be available at your local retailer by Saturday, because Friday at midnight, technically. So I'll be curious to see now. We've already seen a tremendous number of Astromilitarum players in the local meta. How do you think this will change how those players are playing in the local meta?
Locally, I mean, let's be honest, I haven't actually gone up against anyone playing the guard since 8th edition came out. That being said, I wouldn't be surprised if more guard players come out of the come out of hiding with stronger lists than what they've done, what they've played in the past.
So let's think nationally. We've been, as we cover all these tournaments week after week, there's usually at Astro Militarum at least one, if not two, in the top eight. How do you think these guys will change their list?
I think it's going to depend on whether or not they want to stick with the numbers for conscripts. If they decide they want to keep their numbers, we'll see little changes in how they make their list, but ultimately they'll stay the same. If they choose to go the other route, which is just drop the how many conscripts they have because they'd like to keep their list layout the same, I'm curious to see on how they would actually adjust the rest of the list. My first thought is they might try to throw in a couple extra of the psychers, but it could just as easily be anything else that sounds good right now.
Yeah, I'm curious, because, like I said, most of our Astro Militarum lists, we've been seeing, you know, a wall of conscripts followed by a lot of long-range artillery-type or heavy support units. The changes that really struck me is they're really making an effort to make Leben Russes playable on the tabletop. And I remember playing a game back in 5th edition, 4th ed or something. A buddy of mine took that armored fist. I don't remember if it was a formation or a specific list, but basically he didn't tell me he was bringing it, and I had, I think, 3 Meltaguns in my entire list. So I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun game. And now you take, you know, that could be a very viable list and very easily to put off, with, especially with a lot of spearhead detachments and whatnot. Secondly, yeah, the Melta was like the only way to kill it, but those lists are now quite viable for both sides, because now anything can hurt a Leben Russ tank, but there's still toughness 8, 3 up armor. I think 12 wounds? They're up there. So you think about it, that's still a chunk of metal that you got to really pop through. And now if they move under half speed, they're firing that top weapon twice at the same target. Ah! I don't know. I definitely could see a shift from, you've got the old faction of mostly infantry and bodies in the way, and then likewise you have these more armored units moving forward. Especially with that one stratagem or order, I can't remember off the top of my head. Oh, the tank hits on 2s in close combat. Ah! What the heck is that?
I could definitely see this being a big powerhouse when it comes to the more horde style armies right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it already has, but I can definitely see it staying that way.
So the only downside I see to this list, though, is they have all these cool rules for all these cool regiments. Are these models still available?
Actually, a lot of them have become available again. It's very limited, but so mostly what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of Cadian models or Catachan models being used in place, but to a small extent, GW has begun selling the other models, like the Vestroians, the Mordians, all that. Now, they are still, I believe they're all metal still, but they're there. You can find them on the GW store page.
They're metal? You gotta be kidding. They gotta made them fine cast by now.
You know, I gotta be honest, I never actually thought to check what they were made of.
Tell you what, I'll pick one up and throw it at you, and you tell me if it's metal or fine cast.
We'll figure it out after I catch it and throw it back.
Ah! All right, welcome back, guys. This is normally the portion of the show where we go over your ITC top 10, but as of this recording, they've not been updated since last week, so rather than repeating the names, I thought to give you a little bonus rankings. We're going to go over the top players in each of the factions as they stand currently. So in first place for Adeptus Sororitas is Adrian Gennard. He's also in the top 10 overall. Adeptus Astartes, the top Space Marine player in the land at this point, is Trent Northington. The defending champ, Thomas Hegstrom Oakley, just a mere 20, this is about 30 points behind him. So we'll see how he does, because there's one of his big events in his home state this coming weekend. Top Eldari player currently is Tony Myers. Top Militarum player is Brandon Grant, no surprise, followed closely by Andrew Gagno, and then Ian Andrew. So three of the top 10 players in that particular faction. Your top Blood Angel players this week is Timothy Travers. Your top Chaos Suit player is Sam Henley, who we talked about earlier today. Matter of fact, James Cormona, who won our event last week, is only 36 points behind Sam for the top spot. Chaos Demon, your top player is Ian Andrew. For Chaos Renegades, it's Aaron Hayden. Chaos Space Marines, you have Kieran Howard. For Adeptus Mechanicus, you have Ben Kent. For Dark Angels, you have Kyle Watson. Hey, Ray, it's your favorite faction. Dark Mechanicus, guess who your top player is?
Someone who didn't play Dark Mechanicus last week.
Yes, Quinn Sheppers. He doesn't care what you say, Ray. He's still top his faction, whether you like his list or not. Number one Drukhari player, Herb Schaefer. Number one Death Watch player. I didn't know Death Watch had their own faction in the standings. Anthony D'Amour. Love that name. Top or Asuri. I can't say this word. Asurian. The Eldar, Craft World. Getting a codex soon. Top player is Andrew Ford. They don't have a faction anymore, but they're still being ranked. Carter Leach is still the top Eldar Corsair player. And probably will end that way because there's just no codex for them yet. Top Grey Knight player this week is Shaylin Allen. Top Gene Stealer Cult player is Josh Bagwell, followed closely by Jonathan Camacho, we talked about last week. Top Harlequins player, David Ivings, followed closely by Cameron Pinero. Some pretty high scores there for Harlequins. It's pretty neat. Imperial Agents faction. Emery Burgess is your top player there. For your faction Imperium, you have Aaron Along as your top player there. Imperial Knights, you have Mike Keyes. In Knights Renegades, you have Tom Drury in first place. Your top next round player, Alexander Gonzalez. Haven't heard from him in a while. Good to see him get to the top of the ranks again. Top Orc player is Bill Souza. Your top Space Wolf player is Mitchell Pelham. For the greater good, the top Tau player is Paul McKelvey, still hanging on there at 486 points. Your top Tyranid player is Henry II. And your top Inari player is Adam Gotti at 429 points. So there you go, best in faction, little bonus coverage this particular week. Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
Well, one of the ones we've got is looking at this list. I'm looking at the Crucible 6.5.
Ooh, that's a good event.
40k GT. That is in. It's at the Park Inn Radisson in Kissimmee, Florida.
It's right outside Disney World. Don't know if Mickey will be attending. Bet she's bringing Astra Militarum, though.
I saw another list on here, if you'll give me just one sec, another one on here, but it's not showing up.
Well, I know the Salt Lake City Gladiator Games is this weekend as well in Utah, and that's usually the largest tournament in the state of Utah, and there's some, the Double Dutch Rudders are one of the top teams that produce some of the top 10 players, so they'll be there in full force, so good luck to them. We see that they're good friends of the show, and should be a very cool event.
Yeah, that was the other one. That looks to be it this weekend.
All right. I promise I will not talk about my crazy dream I had the other night about Codex predictions. Don't know if they're true. This came to me in my subconscious. It was pretty funny, though. We got a good laugh out of it.
I was just going to say, keep an eye out for any announcements. Still waiting to see if they're going to when they're going to announce the other two unknown Codexes for this year. And then, of course, whatever's coming next after the guard.
So it should be either Nids or Eldar. So we should be probably seeing some hints pretty soon via the Warhammer community page. So that could be interesting. But I'm just so excited because the way they've been between regimental doctrines and chapter tactics, so that means we're finally getting orc clans back, individual craft world abilities, an individual high fleet is something that's super excited. We've never seen that before. It was nothing more than a paint scheme and a fluff story.
Mm-hmm.
So now you actually choose between, was it Leviathan? Oh boy, I can't remember the other two.
Leviathan, Kraken, I know in the fluff dimensions one called Gorgon. Behemoth was the other big one.
It's a Behemoth, yeah. I wonder if the one will get, like, preferred enemy Ultramarines because they attack it so often. That'd be hilarious.
Well, Behemoth, if I remember, was the one that almost wiped out the Ultramarines.
Yeah, that'd be funny if they had, like, preferred enemy Ultramarines. But I'd also see if they bring back the Duma Malentai and bring a, you know, because that was the whole, they just didn't have a model for it, and they sort of brought it back in the last Codex. That'd be cool to see that back again.
Wait and see on that one.
Yeah, there's a lot of, yeah, some really cool stuff that they can do with the Tyranids, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, if they can, let's say, if they can make me look excited about Guard, I can't wait what they can do with Nids.
Yeah.
So, another super excited
question will be, will they make Yunari a faction of the craft world, or will they get their own book?
Oh, that's a good question. What do you guys think? Put it on our Facebook page. Will Inari get their own book, yes or no? And tell us why. What are your early thoughts? What do you think?
So the biggest problem is the fact that it's almost like the Harlequins. They have to do with both the craft world Eldar and the Dark Eldar. They really have to have either their own book, or it would actually make more sense if they were to just put them all in one giant book and have them separated.
Yeah, right now the only thing that makes you Inari is that you take one of the characters.
Right.
And then you get all the abilities. And there's a couple exclusions, and mostly from the Dark Eldar side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no. So part of me says, yeah, getting your own... I'd be kind of disappointed if I got a book and I only got 3 unit entries in it.
Well, if it was their own book, I would assume that they would just include the rules for the models from both ends that they can't use.
That would be interesting. Didn't think of it that way. I was kind of holding my breath for some more unique models. Some sort of Inari specialized, unique troop to go along with everything. I don't know. It's one of those... they got to sell the kit. They came out with the new model last year. Yeah, I maybe they'll hold off and make it its own codex once they get enough models to flesh out the rest of the... Yeah, I would hate to see buying a codex that includes a hodgepodge of Eldar and Craft World unit entries and basic... I don't know. But on the flip side, you could get a whole book of... Inari stratagems. I don't know. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, definitely something we'll have to find out. But that'll be the question when it comes to the Craft World book.
Well, let's think about it. How many Craft Worlds are there? There's Altioch.
Bail-Tan.
Who the Wind Rider guy? Sam Hain. What are you missing?
Black and Bone.
Ulfhe.
Yeah, Ulfhe. That's 4 right there, and that's just the ones that I can think of. Even I can think of our heads.
Use the internet.
Yeah.
Altioch, Bail-Tan, Iandan, we forgot.
Right.
And Samhain and Ulfhe. So guess what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So there were 6 Space Marine chapters in the first Codex?
No, I thought there were 7.
Okay. And then there were how many factions we just talked about in Guard?
Probably 7.
So my guess is Inari is going to get rolled into the craft world book. It's going to be
There are quite a few currently only fluff craft worlds that could still get brought in. It's just a matter of figuring out, you know, what route they're going to go. So it'll definitely be something we'll have to see.
That's true. There are a couple that are kind of splinter groups, or like some
I think there's background. Just as many that are just fluff as there are that actually really get talked about.
Probably true. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Until then, thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. My name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And we'll talk to you guys next time. Talk to you soon.